Well, I am excited today. This is a first, and it's too long in happening. I'm really excited to have Paul Cech, our founder, here today on the Cech blog. Welcome, Paul. It's so good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. I've seen all the blogs you've done, and they're so beautiful, and I was so proud of them. It's exciting to be part of one of them.
Yeah, well, I'm really thrilled, and you know, thanks for being here today. We've got a great topic. I think it's timely and interesting on so many dimensions. Now, as I understand it, one of your students brought an article to your attention, and it's an article about Osho. And you'll talk about Osho in a second, but this is a philosopher that's really important to you on positive thinking and why positive thinking is a terrible terrible advice. I get why somebody might say that, but I'm really fascinated to hear your take on this, both your take on Osho and your take on positive thinking, because certainly it's something, you know, just the idea of positive thinking is advice that we hear people given all the time. And so I guess what I'd like to I'd love to have you start off is just to tell us a little tiny bit about Osho and why Osho is so important to you.
Sure. First, I'd like to just add a little to what you said earlier, and that is that the student that brought that to me, this article to me, and expressed her concerns is quite a high-level Czech professional. And her concern was is that there are so many of my students that love Osho and follow Osho and hang on his words. And I'm one of the people responsible for that because I've exposed countless thousands of people to Osho's teachings. And she felt that it was problematic because people are likely to read this article and then begin to lose faith in the 1-2-3-4 model, because our whole model depends on what we call the dream, which is the motive or objective that someone is using to channel their energy into. So her concern, as I understood it, was that people could easily read this article as students and believe, well, what's the point of having a dream or goals then?
Yeah.
Because that's really just a form of positivism. So her request to me was to address this issue because she knows that I've spent a lot of time studying Osho. So with that, I will now lead into my discussions of my experience of Osho. I'd like to say that, first of all, I own what is called the Osho Library. When I began my interest in Osho, was probably, I'm guessing, around 2005. And I found his work very stimulating to me. And I was younger then, and I had more fire in me. So his polarizing approach I found attractive. It was like listening to a radio announcement of a great boxing match, maybe back before television, right? And Osho's intellect is very, very powerful. So he's kind of like a lawyer who can work both sides of the fence very well. And he can be quite bedazzling with his depth of knowledge and his mastery of words. And so I own about 170 of Osho's books, all the books that are published in English, except the ones, some of the ones they've been publishing recently, which are just rehashes of what I have. I own every single lecture on audio recording that was available, which is about 400 hours or 450 hours of Osho's recordings from his sessions with his students. Which were quite regularly. So I've spent for about somewhere between 4 and 5 years, I studied Osho every day, and I listened to Osho's lectures on audio through headphones while I trained every day. So that was about an hour of time in the gym listening to Osho. I've got every DVD, every VCR, the old VHS tapes. I've got the old CD-ROM programs with Osho. I've got all his dynamic meditations. I've studied all of it. And some of my students, like Elliot Hulse, that have been here that are big Osho fanatics, wanted, of course, to see my library, but I also showed them something that was quite a surprise for them, and that is almost 800 pages of handwritten notes from my studies of Osho.
Yeah.
So I'm prefacing this by saying my opinions about Osho are not just superficial, like, what do you think of some movie star?
Yeah.
I devoted almost 5 years of time to an in-depth study, and anything that I could digest, metabolize, assimilate, and reproduce within myself that I thought was positive, so that I could live better because of it and share with others, I did. And some of the teachings that I teach were inspired by Osho.
Yeah.
You know, Osho comes from India. He went to school, but he had a lot of problems with teachers because he was a nonconformist even as a child. He claims to have read over 100,000 books. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I've been reading pretty intensely for my whole professional career, and I've averaged around 55 books a year. Now, I study books. I don't just read them. You've seen what I do to books. And so, you know, if you just took 100,000 books across the span of the years that Osho could read, he would almost have to be reading 24/7, and he still probably wouldn't have time to read 100,000 books. There's no question he's read a lot, if you study the broad spectrum of Osho's discussions. He had some tremendous talents. He came to the United States to show people that you didn't have to do anything to make money. That was one of his reasons for coming. That's what he stated, at least.
Yeah.
And so people often know he had 91 Rolls Royces. He had a large collection of multi-million dollar watches. But what people don't often know is how he got all that money. And I think that's an important part of the introduction. Osho, when you joined Osho as a sannyasin, which would be like a brahmachari or an understudy of a monk, you had to give up all your wealth into the community, into the Osho community. He had many people in there from very, very wealthy families. He had people from British royalty inside of his organization that were sannyasins. So it's important to remember that Osho's abundance comes by way the same path that many of the Christian priests and preachers, the Jimmy Swaggerts and the, you know, the people that have, we've often seen, get railroaded with all sorts of scandals.
Yeah, it's like tithing.
Yeah, and so it can give the wrong impression to people because they don't really understand. They actually think Osho just sat around and money just fell out of the sky. And which is kind of that youthful, kind of exuberant. Osho's kind of like a you know, one of those superheroes, you know, that can turn worlds into mush or explode stars with a punch or something, Hercules type thing. Now, he did publish approximately 500 books, which are all basically made from his recordings of his lectures and then edited largely by students. Mm-hmm. He only wrote, I think if I remember right, less than 4 of his own books, maybe even 2. Mm-hmm. All that was done by his students. Mm-hmm. My point being is that he probably made a fairly significant amount of money in royalties because he is quite popular and has sold a lot of books. So getting other people to transcribe, edit, and make your books beautiful for you that are your students to make a lot of money, well, that would be a good example of how to do almost nothing and make a lot of money. And really, that's ultimately what anyone that runs any kind of company or corporation is doing anyhow. So paradoxically, Osho just made himself the CEO of his own religious business, which he wouldn't call a religious business, but it fits that category.
Yeah, right.
So what I'd like to say is that Osho is an opportunity to get multiple perspectives on a lot of things, and he is very critical of a lot of things that are worth being critical of, such as organized religion. Without a long story, he got himself in a lot of trouble by being honest about the dangers of organized religion, and I've even seen video footage of him being escorted out of Greece because the Roman Catholic Church was so upset that he was lecturing there again, because every time he would come there, they'd have a huge problem with young people, 25, like around 25 and under, stop going to the church, and it creates this huge kind of backlash on the church. So the investigations that I read said that the church basically leveraged the government to get him thrown out of the country. Well, by the time Osho died, he had been kicked out of 23 countries for that kind of stuff. So he did bring a lot of consciousness to the problems of organized religion, but he often did it in ways that, instead of taming the dragon, made the dragon want to bite. Okay? So Osho gives you this sort of heavy yin, heavy yang polarity on things. He has a very crafty way of presenting. He uses jokes to keep people engaged with humor. He had professional joke writers. I actually have a 500 or 600 page book of all his jokes. But at the same time, I found myself feeling quite sad, even holding back tears, because a man that I love so much, for all the great joys he gave me and all the insights that he gave me, also left me in pain and feeling sad for him, because he had a lot of very nasty things to say about gay people or people of same-sex relationships. And he was very hard on them and rude and disgusting at times. And for me, if I was a gay person and I didn't know that Osho was that way, and I showed up to one of his events or wanted to be a follower, and all of a sudden that was let out of the bag, I would feel as though a knife had gone through my heart. And so for a man that shall we say talked God as much as he did, it amazed me that he could ignore the fact that all people are God, no matter what their sexual preference is. And it also surprised me that it escaped his wit that if God is God, then God has to be a hermaphrodite or nothing would be here. Right? God has to be the man and the woman. Therefore, not only is God having sex with God, but that's incest. So everything that we ascribe as negative about other people paradoxically turns out to be the essential quality of God.
And you've written about this on your blog too, right?
I've probably written about this. You know, I've made so many blogs, they all blend together now. But
I'm pretty sure that you did,
So there was that. And then Osho was a hardcore vegetarian guy, and he wanted everyone to eat vegetarian. And I don't think any of his resorts, there might be one of all of them, that you can get any meat at. You cannot go to an Osho resort unless you're going to eat and live as a vegetarian. And so he was heavy into all the vegetarian stuff. But the problem was, is that, you know, I have got a lot of pictures of Osho, and Osho first was quite fat. And then he got very sick. And then he became very skinny because he had pancreatic cancer. So someone who hasn't studied Osho wouldn't really realize that Osho giving diet advice isn't much better than an obese medical doctor giving diet advice.
Yeah.
And so, as someone who spent his life studying nutrition and holistic health and all the things that I have, hearing Osho talking about diet was enough to just, it was like someone's dragging their nails across a chalkboard.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God. And so what I felt was, for all the beauty and all the brilliance that Osho had, he oftentimes consciously or unconsciously abused his authority position to become an authority on things that he did not have authority of. Mm. And so it left a lot of people following his advice like the word of God, only to create problems in their own life.
Yeah.
And so to kind of conclude my introduction on Osho, in shamanism, he would be called the coyote, okay, or the trickster.
Yeah.
And the trickster is somebody who shows up in your life and often does things to disturb you, to provoke you into a state of having to look at how you react to a situation, to become more conscious of your own imbalances. So the trickster can actually use pain and manipulation and all sorts of things to provoke your reaction to the event, specifically to objectively demonstrate where you are stuck. And to help understand the trickster, I remember watching an interview with Fred Allen Wolf where he talked about his experience with a shaman who was a trickster. Hmm. And he went to this village to meet the shaman because he'd heard about him. Well, he didn't know who the shaman was, so a bunch of the natives in the area showed up and they must have all been in on this thing. Well, the guy that actually turned out to be the shaman shows up, only has met Fred Allen Wolf for a few minutes, and they're off to go to dinner, and all of a sudden the guy says, "Oh my God, I forgot to shave. Can I borrow your razor?" And so what happened was, is the shaman knew that that would probably really irritate him, but at the same time he knew, because he was a guest with all these Indians, he was going to put him in sort of this painful situation where I don't want to say no to this guy, but on the inside, like, I don't want to give some strange guy my razor, you know. And it was an electric razor, you know.
Yeah.
So the guy took his razor and shaved, and you know, and then if I remember the story right, kind of, I'm paraphrasing, but left his bathroom mess. But the shaman knew right how to piss Fred Allen Wolf off and throw him right off his feet right from the start.
Yeah.
Well, to make a long story short, this shaman kept doing all sorts of this stuff, and he, using his abilities as a shaman, knew right where his weak spots were. Finally, after this long ordeal, Fred Allen Wolf realized that the shaman had planned all this all along, and it was all part of it.
Uh-huh.
And so that's the trickster, and Osho has trickster qualities.
Mm.
Okay, he's very much a trickster.
Yeah.
He often takes hard juxtapositions to polarize people. And, you know, I can say that I'm accused of doing that, but I would also say that I believe Osho feels the way I feel, because inside of my heart, whether I'm right or wrong, I feel like I'm telling people the truth. Mm. And if they don't like it, that I can't take responsibility for that, right? If somebody loves doing abdominal crunches all day long but don't realize that's screwing their back and their neck up, and I show them what's happening and they want to see Paul's an idiot because he doesn't like crunches, that's their prerogative. Yeah. But I am an expert on what I'm talking about.
Mm.
So when people get upset at me, I always, you know, when people like conference directors say to me, "Aren't you worried you're pissing so many people off?" And they also say, "We don't know, you're the strangest guy in the world because you piss so many people off, but they keep coming back to your lectures." And they ask me, "Why is that?" I said, "Because the deeper part of them knows that what I'm telling them is the truth."
Yeah.
And the part of them that's offended is the part that doesn't want to change its behaviors and its program. But their heart actually knows that they're hearing the truth. Yeah. And if you make somebody angry by telling them the truth, the problem is every time they get angry at you, you are inside them. If you're angry at Paul Cech or Osho and you think, I hate this guy, well, every time you have that anger and that emotion towards them, they're alive in you like they're standing right in front of you. And so what happens is, after enough of that, because every time you have that emotion, it polarizes you. So someone's like, ah, damn Paul Cech, he thinks crunches are bad, he's such an idiot. Well, then everywhere he runs, he sees people doing crunches, and he thinks about it. And the next thing you know, he runs into one of his buddies who got a disc injury, and his doctor told him not to do crunches anymore, or his physical therapist. Then he runs into someone with neck pain who used to do crunches but now doesn't. And all of a sudden, it dawns on him, damn it, that asshole was right. So you see, what I'm sharing is Osho uses the capacity to piss people off to stick with them. And he doesn't really care, in my observation, whether you agree with them or not. What he's trying to do is put you in a position where you've got this burr in your sock and you can't ignore it. Somehow you've got to get that burr out of you. And the only way you can get the burr out, or the Osho out, or the Paul Cech as an example, is to pay attention to what is actually going on, find it, and engage with it.
Yeah.
So you got to look into the crunching thing for yourself. You got to look into the vegetarian thing for yourself. You got to look into the gay thing for yourself. You have to ask yourself, what is your God? And your God does not love eating meat or people of same-sex relationship. Then you have to ask yourself, how can that be a God if those people are here and they're as real as I am? So there's the burr.
Yeah, or like Socrates said, right? They called him the gadfly. Same sort of thing, that biting, stinging.
Now, to close my introduction on my observations and feelings about Osho, there's much, much I could say, as you can imagine. But I did an audio recording that's available on the Czech Institute website called The Absolute Essentials of Osho, where I synthesize what I thought to be some of the most important things that Osho did teach. So I'll just close my introduction by saying, I do love Osho, but he was a human being, just like all of us are. He had areas of genius, but areas where he extended the genius from one area and projected it into another area where it was not authentic, such as diet or the understanding that God is in gay people, lesbians, transsexuals, whatever they are, and God loves all of it, or it wouldn't be happening, right? And so I think that there's a lot of beauty in Osho, but my preface to this is that my concern is for the young people who don't have enough wisdom or depth of knowledge or experience that are seeking some kind of powerful guru figure to give them some sense of guidance, a second daddy, or some sort of icon. And those people, in my experience, because many of my students have done this, they'll come right up to me with things that Osho said in books and quote them to me and say, well, if what you're saying is true, then Osho must be wrong or whatever. You know, my own students use Osho against me at times, and other people, but I can easily show them that they don't actually understand what Osho's saying in many instances, nor do they understand why he might be saying that. And they also don't have enough life experience to even have a contextual framework to really make a decision as to whether that's true or not.
Right.
Someone who's raised in a vegetarian family usually has to get themselves in trouble with their health before they have a reason to identify the context as to why that may not be good for everybody. And then when they have context, they look around, they go, oh my God, everybody that I know that's a vegetarian has these symptoms.
Yeah.
Or most of them, let's say. And I'm not against vegetarians being a vegetarian, as you know. I'm just saying what works today as medicine could be poison for anyone tomorrow. And we need to be dynamic with everything, including gurus.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, I was going to come back to that, but I mean, the idea of using Osho against somebody in a way raises this topic that I want to come back to towards the end, is how people sort of view their heroes, their gurus, right? And the idea that people often unreflectively sort of lean on their gurus to frame their lives or to use against other people, like we're just saying, in a way that's, you know, probably not healthy or good.
Or to justify behaviors that aren't even good for them.
That's right. Exactly. So we'll come back to that. But I want to get to, you know, the sort of main topic for today, which is this idea of positive thinking and Osho's take on it. We'll put a link to the article that your student brought to you. But basically, the article is an overview of Osho's criticisms of positive thinking. And I think the best place to start out is just to lay out what positive thinking is, so that we can understand what he's critiquing. And in the article, the author just says that positive thinking is basically thinking positive and believing that your problems will go away, surely by having positive thoughts.
Yeah.
And the first thing, I'm just going to read one of Osho's quotes here about that view. His first criticism is really just that this kind of positive thinking is self-deceiving. It's deception. And he says the philosophy of positive thinking means being untruthful. It means being dishonest. It means seeing a certain thing and yet denying what you have seen. It means deceiving yourself and deceiving others. So that's sort of one of the overarching criticisms there. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think that, you know, later he criticizes Napoleon Hill, who wrote Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
But I think that I've studied a lot of these books. And from my experience, and I'll use Think and Grow Rich as an example, and if it's not Think and Grow Rich, it's Napoleon Hill's more comprehensive study book, which I think, you know, is like several hundred pages. I have it, and I used to study it a lot. But Napoleon Hill, for example, taught not so much what Osho's talking about as positive thinking. He taught to be very clear about what it is that you wanted to achieve and to focus on that. But he also had comprehensive training and explanations and even questionnaires for identifying where you were not whole. And he showed you how to survey your friends and family members and open yourself to constructive criticism so that you could become more aware of your unconscious elements. He didn't use the words of modern psychology like the unconscious. He used more words like pay attention to what you're not aware of. And the way you do that is you invite criticism from people whose opinions you trust, but you give them the confidence that you're open to the criticism so they're not insecure about telling you what they really see. So my feeling is that these comments by Osho aren't really authentic based on an actual in-depth study of the philosophies that he's referring to, because none of them that I know of promote that kind of one-sided silliness without self-responsibility or self-reflection.
That's right.
So this is kind of like a fishing lure, you know. If you only look at the flash of the light, you're probably going to bite the hook and end up on someone's dinner table.
Yeah.
And so here Osho's flashing the lure.
Right.
But as a master fisherman, I would say Osho's comments show me that he is not actually looking into these philosophies. He's just going on the words of a few students or a few clips in the news.
Yeah.
And I think that anyone that studies the Carnegies of the world or the Napoleon Hill or the Tony Robbins of the world, there's a pile of people out there doing exactly what he's talking about, but almost all of them that I know of have a significant amount of honest looking into oneself. So in conclusion, I really think that Osho's just being a trickster here and not being honest, because if he'd really looked into that, he personally might have benefited from using Napoleon Hill's book and been even richer.
Yeah, well, and you're right. I mean, we talked about this, you know, as you're sort of prepping for this, the idea, it's really a straw man, right? There's a lot of ways you can be a positive thinker, right? If I eat, if I go to McDonald's, right, and I eat McDonald's and I have digestive distress afterwards, this is, you know, so likely the case. Well, the sort of straw man version says, well, I'll just sort of keep on going about my way and believe that I'll be just fine. Or, you know, another way of being a positive thinker is seeing the pattern, recognizing that eating at McDonald's is not good for me, and then, well, that's an easy problem to fix. Yes. I just don't go there again, and I'll be fine. And there's another way of being a positive thinker that acknowledges the problem without sort of sticking my head in the sand and being an ostrich.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that I don't, if I'm disrupting the flow of your questions, let me know.
That's right.
But one of the key things that Osho's saying is you're ignoring the negative.
Yeah, right.
So you're acting unconsciously.
Yeah.
And that you need to look at both sides and rise above it. But here's the harsh reality of the shallowness of that statement. Mm. Anybody that's living the philosophy Osho's criticizing, let's say the misapplication of positivism or positive thinking, cannot escape the reality that our choices are always mirrored back to us in our environment.
Mm.
So someone who keeps playing the positivity game and going to McDonald's watches themselves become an obese person over the next 8 to 12 months.
Yeah.
So the unconscious truth of the decision manifests itself as something objective in your environment.
Yeah.
If you are being rude to people at work and getting yourself in trouble and then saying, oh, it's okay, it's just their problem, or it's what I got to do to make it to the top, which would be the kind of thing that Osho's criticizing. Well, the problem is you're going to keep getting fired and nobody's going to want to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is that I'll quote Arnold Patton in his Universal Principles. He says, if you don't like what is happening in your life, look carefully at what you're creating unconsciously.
Yeah.
So you can only play that kind of negative aspect of positivism so long before your whole life is so painful you can't even participate anymore, because you have to look at the fact that your wife has left you, you've been fired from your job, you're sucking on a bottle of alcohol all the time. So ultimately, there really is no escape, because consciousness mirrors itself everywhere.
Yeah.
In other words, if however I act to you, it mirrors back to me through your response to me.
Yeah.
And no matter how positive I convince myself of it, it is, if I'm being rude or disrespectful to you, well, I then have to one day be positive about the fact that I have no more friends. And now I'm sitting all by myself.
Yeah.
Then you're forced into meditation and you find that the philosophy breaks down, because it's like a bicycle that needs two wheels, but it's only got one wheel. The back wheel, let's say, would represent the opposite polarity, or if the front wheel's positive, the back, you can't ride that bike. You just get grounded.
Yeah.
So the world is set up so that if we're paying at least moderate attention, no matter what your philosophy is, the reverberation of the living mirror of life itself guarantees you're going to have wake-up calls or philosophical adjustments.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned Napoleon Hill, and I wanted to, you know, he talks about Napoleon Hill pretty explicitly here, especially Napoleon Hill early in his career, in a meeting between he and Henry Ford. And I thought we should talk about that too, because this is another case, and now that you have described Osho as a trickster, I can kind of see him acting in that way, especially in this case of the story of Napoleon Hill meeting Henry Ford. And I just wanted to quickly refer to that. I'll just read it here really quickly, and then you can talk about it. So Osho says, about Napoleon Hill, I remember he himself was a poor man. That would have been enough proof to disprove his whole philosophy. He became rich by selling the book Think and Grow Rich. But it was not positive thinking that made him rich. It was fools around the world who were purchasing his book. It was his work, his labor, his effort. But in the very beginning days when his book came out, he used to stand in bookstores to persuade people to purchase it. And it happened that Henry Ford came in his latest model car and went into the bookshop to find something light to read. And Napoleon Hill did not want to miss this chance. He went forwards with his book and he said, "A great book has just been published. You will be happy with it. And it is not only a book, it is a sure method of success." Henry Ford looked at the man and said, "Are you the writer of the book?" Napoleon Hill said proudly, "Yes, I am the writer of the book." This is one of these parts that Osho sort of cracks me up. And Osho says, "And he can be proud, that is, Napoleon Hill can be proud. That book he has written is a piece of art. And to create a piece of art out of crap is real mastery." Henry Ford, without touching the book, just asked one question: "Have you come in your own car or on the bus?" And Napoleon Hill could not understand what he meant. He said, "Of course I came on the bus." In response, Henry Ford says, "Look outside. That is my private car, and I am Henry Ford. You are befooling others. You don't even have a private car, and you write a book called Think and Grow Rich. And I have grown rich without thinking. So I don't want to bother with it. You think and grow rich, and when you grow rich, then you come to me. That will be the proof. The book is not the proof." So that's his story about Osho, Napoleon Hill, and Henry Ford. And as I said, I mean, it seems a little unfair to the book, but I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this story.
Well, it's one, it's very deceptive, because it doesn't actually tell the story of how the book got written, or who Napoleon Hill is in context to the book. And it also uses what are presented as factual statements, all this stuff that Henry Ford apparently said, but I've never seen any legitimate reference to that because I have seen Osho say that before. And I could find no objective reference of that. So there's the trickster again, right? There's no objective place we can go to make a decision as to whether that's true or whether that's just another story that's been made up. Okay, so that's the first thing that you got to know. The second thing that I want to point out is that Napoleon Hill wrote a book based on his investigation into 500 millionaires and billionaires, and it wasn't his philosophy of how to get rich. He was a journalist who had the privilege of working with Mr. Carnegie, who at that time was one of the richest men in the world and the founders of, I think it is U.S. Steel or one of the main steel corporations. And so he interviewed these people, and basically what he did was synthesize together the common denominators that all these successful men had. For example, he asked every one of them, what was it that made you work so hard to make all this money? Well, interestingly enough, every one of them said that it was a woman. It was either their mother, their wife, or their lover. Okay. So every single one of these people was inspired to please a woman that they loved. Now, that is a common denominator.
Yeah.
Okay. And what are you seeing right there? You're seeing the play of complementary opposites at work at the core level of the psyche, right? A man who's loving his woman becomes whole in the act of that love, and in the experience of loving his woman, takes on more embodiment of and awareness of the qualities of her as a feminine principle. For example, he might initially be quite heavy-handed with the children, but he may wake up to the fact that she gets better results in getting them to behave well by being nurturing and loving, and grows to learn from his wife, how do you handle children with love instead of treating them like dogs that you're training to fight or to chase sheep, right? Mm. So Napoleon Hill's book was a book not of his own ideas. And that's what Osho is accusing him of, is trying to write a book about how to be rich when he wasn't rich.
Yeah.
Osho was a journalist who devoted his life to the intimate study of these people and interviewed 500 of them. Imagine how long that would took to travel around back in those days.
Yeah.
And so, yes, he did not have a lot of money, but he obviously made enough money to feed his family. He had a son that was deaf. He was a committed and loving father. His philosophy is very sound. It's quite neutral in polarity, so it doesn't cause problems with different religions. And so really, Napoleon Hill should be, if anything, regarded as a world-class journalist whose heart guided him to spend his life researching things that would ultimately increase the likelihood of anyone that read it of having the ability and the knowledge and the awareness of how to create abundance in their life. And as I said, there is plenty of Napoleon Hill's teachings on looking into the negative aspects of yourself that Osho claims that people like him overlook.
Yeah.
So it's very, very unfair to misrepresent Napoleon Hill. It's unfair to make a statement that Henry Ford said something objectively against him without leaving some kind of a clear record to authenticate that. Mm-hmm. And Osho is unfortunately full of that stuff.
Yeah.
So this is where one needs to be careful not to fall into the euphoria of teenage sexual infatuation, because if you don't take Osho into you with discernment, you can end up with as much shit going on in your life as him. Mm. And if you want to read a book about the shit going on in his life, there's a great book called My Dance with a Madman. I can't remember the author's name, but My Dance with a Madman, you can look at the introduction on the book. It'll be all about his life. And it was the guy that was in charge of his press. I think it was like his secretary. And he lets the cat out of the bag about how Osho was a major shit disturber and caused lots of trouble in his own camp.
Yeah. Good. Well, that's good, because and it does, you know, I'm finding your framing of Osho as the trickster a lot more helpful to understand some of the things that he said, but this particularly in the case of this Napoleon Hill story. So there's one last criticism I think that we should address in this article, and this is Osho's point that the negative ideas of your mind have to be released, not repressed, and that positive thinking is a way of repressing your negative feelings rather than releasing them.
Well, I think that I don't think that they always have to be released. Mm-hmm. You know, if you release your anger, then you get someone going into McDonald's with a machine gun. Mm. But if you are around loving people that can support you, and you're open to being present with your anger and allowing yourself to feel it, but become a witness of it as opposed to a victim of it, then you can transform that powerful emotion into something that is more whole.
Yeah.
Then you're not avoiding it, but you're also not becoming unconscious in it and acting it out in ways that only trigger off more anger in other people. And therefore, like I said, you mirror back. Love is a boomerang. You throw anger out, the anger comes back at you, and then you get angrier, and the next thing you know, you got a gunfight.
Yeah.
So it's a bit misleading to say you have to express your anger, like you need to go punch people out and scream and yell. There is a place for screaming and yelling and beating pillows, and that's all been done in psychology for many years. But that's really a form of transformation, because it's one thing to beat a pillow and it's another thing to go punch your spouse in the face because you're angry at him. Mm. So again, Osho can be quite misleading with his words.
Yeah.
And so transformation, but the first thing is the negative needs to be brought into awareness.
Yeah.
If you release it and it's not, you're not in a state of awareness, then you're just another violent husband or another drunk driving around, running through stoplights and risking the death of people. So, you know, it's interesting because the title of the article is A Zen Master Explains Why Positive Thinking is Terrible Advice. But my question is, who gave Osho the title of Zen Master? I've studied extensively, and I see zero record of him ever doing any Zen training with any master where he had to look into his own silliness.
Yeah.
And so there's another deception right there.
Yeah.
You know, if I ran around calling myself a medical doctor, that would be very deceptive to people.
Yeah.
But I am a holistic health practitioner, proud of it, and embody that fully because that's who I am.
Yeah.
But to claim that you're a Zen master when you don't act Zen or behave Zen or think Zen, but really behave more like a trickster, you know, other archetypes that would fit Osho are the clown or the fool in tarot archetype.
Mm-hmm.
But Osho's a bit of a paradox, because in many ways he's a wise fool, which means he's learned the lesson of the archetypes.
Yeah.
But he's also an immature fool when he criticizes meat-eating people and also same sex or anything other than heterosexual. So there you see this paradox of polarity in Osho, is that he goes from very, very immature and authoritarian, which he hated people being, and shallow and deceiving, to being very authentic and masterly.
Yep.
Some of his meditation techniques are very masterly. Some of his philosophies on life and on love and on sex are very masterly. But the problem is that if a person can't import concepts from intellect into action, like how can you give lectures on what God really is, but then have criticism to gay people, unless God still remains at the intellectual level of your awareness?
Yeah.
So that's one of the beauties of Osho, because the further you go into him, the more you realize you have to be careful, because he's like a double-edged sword. It's something that you can protect yourself with if you need to, but if you start swinging it around unconsciously, people get badly hurt.
Yeah, yeah. And that comes to the more general point I think, you know, I thought was really important to make. And you had said earlier to take Osho with discernment.
Yes.
And I thought that was really smart and useful and more instructive to the general point that we were taught way back at the beginning, which is how you use your gurus in your life, how you rely on your gurus, how do they help you inform the way you behave? And if you don't take your gurus with discernment, whoever they are, whether it's Osho or, you know, whomever, this is usually a surefire way of getting yourself in trouble, you know, whether it's health-wise or relationship-wise or whatever.
And I have a technique I use for myself and that I encourage my students to use. And that is this. Let's take Osho's position on gay people or vegetarianism.
Mm.
I always say to myself, if everybody was to do what I'm about to do right now, would the world be a better place?
Yeah.
Well, if everybody was disgusted with gay people and criticized them, the world would not be a better place. We'd be right back into the kind of same level of consciousness as you know, being racist and segregatory and having slaves and, you know, all of the stuff that we've been working on growing out of.
Yeah.
So if everybody was a vegetarian, then the world would be full of sick people, because unless you made everybody have the genes of an inland aboriginal,
yeah,
or gave them the spiritual enlightenment of a highly evolved adept that can transcend the material form and live off of air, everyone being a vegetarian would be a very, very big disaster.
Yeah.
So, you know, my simple screening tool for myself is, if everybody was to do what I'm about to do, would the world be a better place? Mm. And generally, it only takes about two neurons holding hands to be honest enough to make that decision, unless you're just so immature that you're not capable of answering a question that important and that honest, which means you're a child. And if you're a child in an adult body, well, then children driving cars and playing with money and playing with sex toys get themselves in trouble.
Yeah.
And that's how they wake up and grow up.
Yeah, that's right. Wow, well, we had quite a journey here.
Yeah, well, I think it's important, you know. I want to close by saying, again, I've gotten a lot of great insights from Osho. And one of my practices is to stay as connected to somebody when they're saying things I don't like as when I do like.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of discipline to do that. You know, I've listened to a lot of religious stuff that makes my wife go crazy because she can hear it on the television. And she asked me, why do you keep listening to that? And I tell her, if you're going to study, if you're going to help people with a disease, you have to understand the disease.
Yeah.
And so I connect myself to it and ask myself, what is it that's really got these people? What are they missing? What were the developmental forces that lead to this many people voting in a Donald Trump, for example? How does that happen when a B-rated actor becomes the president of one of the most dangerous countries and the most powerful countries in the world? So, you know, this is all, for me, a great chance for us to kind of take a reality check. And Osho now just becomes a symbol for all leaders and all gurus and all authority figures. And the Czech system is carefully designed by me, not that I'm any kind of guru. I have no interest in being a guru.
Mm.
I developed a system that teaches you how to think, not what to think.
Yeah.
I show you what you need to look into to find out whether a person's body is functioning correctly. I show you how to look at, but I don't tell you you have to do this or you have to do that. I show you a system for analyzing so you know what data to gather, because without that data, you cannot possibly make an informed decision.
Yeah.
So the whole Czech system, the whole Czech education system is about a methodology to gather the information you need to make intelligent decisions. And I suggest that people have conscious awareness of what their dream goal or objective is, because without a dream goal or objective, how do you discern right from wrong, good for me or not good for me, too much or too little?
So
you know, it's sad for me when people accuse me of trying to make people do things only my way, or say that I'm misleading people or things like that. But in reality, I've built a system that gives you complete freedom to make your own decisions and does not have a recipe card, and requires that you see each human being as an absolute unique individual, and you do not apply stereotypical models to them. So that's made it challenging for me financially, because that's a hard system to get people to go into, because when 99.9% of the people in the world are programmed to follow recipe cards and they don't actually want to do the thinking and the work that it takes to be intelligent and to make decisions and to take responsibility for your choices, then you only get the mavericks. And so we, you know, the Czech education system thankfully has drawn a lot of very, very powerful, highly intelligent people from all over the world, but it's a hard system to sell to people that want to, you know, have fast food education and instant gratification and not study and not look into their own lives and not be the example. And I'm very against telling people what to do, to control them and fixing them to become powerful so you can control them. I'm all about facilitating a person's ability to learn how to make better decisions and understand themselves better and learn what a body is, what emotions are, what a mind is, and how it works, so that they know how to use that sort of discernment to produce the dream that they want to dream do, but without leaving a trail of blood behind them.
Yeah. Discernment. I think that's the word of the day. Discernment.
Yeah. It's an important one.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much, Paul. I'm sad that we waited this long to do this, because this is really great. And this won't be our last. I'm going to find some time and we'll do some more of these.
Hey, it's my pleasure, James. I always love working with you. And you and I have done countless coaching calls and all sorts of stuff together. So this is our first video interview, and it was awesome. Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. Hope you enjoyed it. And hopefully now you all have a better idea of the true elements of what it means to be positive. Yeah. And I'd like to close with a definition of consciousness, which is from Edward Edinger. Consciousness is a psychic substance produced not blindly, but in living awareness of opposites.
Yeah.
So what Edinger is saying, who is a famous psychiatrist and Jungian analyst, he's saying consciousness is something real. Mm-hmm. You cannot weigh it and measure it, but it is actually something that's real. Yeah. And you can't produce consciousness without awareness of the good and the bad, the day and the night, the fast, the slow, the hot, and the cold. But the key word is awareness.
Mm.
Consciousness cannot be produced if you're entangled in the negative or the positive, which is what Osho's criticizing. It can only be produced if you're conscious of both polarities, how to use them, what they're creating, and witnessing that and observing the formula and what it's producing, which is no different than exploring baking in a kitchen, right?
Yeah.
If you just unconsciously throw a bunch of stuff in a bowl and don't pay attention, well, you'll keep doing that.
That's right.
But if you're aware of what was positive about this attempt at a cake and negative about this attempt at a cake, and you say, I learned this from that one. Ah, now let's mix it. Ah, this one tastes even better. And you keep doing that, and you get a master chef after a few years. But if someone's just unconsciously doing what they're told to do or doing what they don't know how to do and not paying attention, well, then they always make lousy cakes and their life is mirroring that back to them. And then it's somebody else's fault next.
That's right. That's right. That's a great place to end. Well, thanks, Paul. Thanks so much. Yeah. And let's do this again soon.
I look forward to it. Take care. Have a great day.
I will. You too.